Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Yes, indeed. And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to LinkedIn Live, if you're watching here too. This is a live recording of The Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. I'm delighted to welcome Denise Barden to the show. And Denise is a climate change sustainability champion. She's Professor of Sustainable Practice at Southampton University. We're going to find out all about the story behind the story of Denise, but Denise, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for inviting me on.
You're extremely welcome. I'm just going to blow a bit of happy smoke at you, and also just a tiny bit of context. This is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing to all share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And I'm delighted to say that Denise was passed the golden baton by Paul Z. Jackson, improvisation guru, and he's worked very closely in a solutions focus context with Denise. And he said that she's extremely worth giving a damn good listening to. So this is why you're here. So if I could ask you a deliberately clunky sort of networky question that we've all got to face, Denise. If somebody says, oh, hello, you look interesting, what do you do? What's your favourite way of avoiding or answering that question, Denise?
Okay, well, I guess at the moment I would say I'm a professor of sustainability and with a side hustle in climate fiction.
And those are your green stories, which are incredible. I know you're going to talk about those as well. And also a really important bit of happy smoke. You're on the Forbes list, where at last count, the official Forbes list of 68 climate, not climate changers, because that makes it sound like it's your fault. But it's called a climate leader of change.
Yes. Yeah. I was delighted to find I was on that. So I think I have some work I did with BAFTA on hashtag climate characters that probably got me noticed by the people who put that forward, and also the work with the Green Stories Project.
Yes, so just tell us a bit about the Green Stories Project as well.
Well, I set that up in 2018 because when you're sort of in the sustainability world, you tend to find you're very busy talking to the same people the whole time. And, you know, I feel like I've got a good grasp, you know, I should do, of the solutions, but trying to get them out there to the right people is a big challenge. So I set up the Green Stories Project as a way to try and encourage writers to embed climate solutions in their stories. And I was also, this is the overlap with Paul, actually, I was also worried that we were taking a very problem-focused approach.
Yes.
And if you make people scared, and they're going to switch off, go into denial, fear, and I know my background's a psychologist,
yes,
fear isn't necessarily going to lead us to the kind of behaviours we want. You know, we're probably more likely to buy up all the toilet rolls than stop, you know, eating beef or flying. So I thought, well, let's use fiction as a way to engage a mainstream audience.
And of course, when we're scared, there's just complete stasis and overwhelm. And
yeah.
Some of the wonderful copy that you have on your own website, you do point out that the more we tend to know and find out, the scarier it becomes. Like the sun, you can't look at it too closely, but if you put your face to one side, you can make your own way. There is a way of putting it right, which is what your green fiction is all about.
Yeah, we've got all the solutions right here. I mean, there's not much we need to do other than probably do less.
Yes, and tread lightly and carefully. Or lightfully and mindfully upon the earth is so doable, is one of the really impactful things that you say. You're also a multi-author as well. You're working on a new book at the moment, aren't you?
I am. So I've just finished one book, The Philosopher and the Assassin, which is I like to do things differently. It's a fusion of whodunit, moral philosophy textbook, and campus novel. So, years ago, our head of school encouraged us to try and entertain students, edutainment, which is a term that many of my colleagues like.
I do entertainment, so I get that. It's lovely when we...
But I thought, well, okay, let's give that a go. So I'm now, like, I could publish it through Habitat Press, but I'm in the market for a larger publisher for that one.
Well, I hope this will help sort of dangle you out there as a very attractive prospect for the publishers that are watching. And in fact, you mentioned Habitat. You published a Habitat-themed rom-com called Habitat Man. I'd love to find out more about that. It's not a man who just goes and buys lots of furniture, obviously.
Well, people sometimes do get that wrong, yes. Now, that was my first novel, and it was my lockdown project. And I'm almost ashamed to say I had a lovely lockdown. Peace, quiet, the birds were tweeting. Yes. And so that was a lovely chance to write the story. And it was inspired partly by this Green Garden consultant, and he'd given up his job, taken early retirement to try and make gardens wildlife friendly. And, you know, he told me I should put in a pond plant, you know, pollinator friendly plants, and put up a water butt and a bat box, and told me to let my grass grow. And I was so inspired by him, because he said, I can only do a few gardens. I wish I could do the world.
Oh, how lovely.
A book can maybe reach a lot more people. And he's had so much more since I published Habitat Man.
And I love that expression, your alliteration. Sorry, your alliteration of I had a lovely lockdown. And to your point about we can all do less, that's why it was lovely, because we were forced to do less. But as you quite rightly said, it was extraordinary. People heard the birds sing probably for the first, I mean, they're always singing, but we can't hear the beautiful things.
I know. And he taught me to see nature, to see my garden through the eyes of nature, through the eyes of bees and birds and hedgehogs. And that was a real gift he gave me. And I tried to gift that to readers of the book. But I also threw in a body for him to dig up, and a romance, and some fun drama there too.
So it sounds like a bit of Wind in the Willows with some extra punchy stuff about sustainability in there.
Yes, yeah, it nearly got through to the Radio 4. It got through to the final sort of round for choosing a comedy series for the 6:30 slot.
Oh, fantastic.
Just got pipped at the post. But I was very, very thrilled that it got that far. I see it as a TV series, so any TV producers out there. So many people have got in contact saying, this should be a TV series. Have you thought of this person, that person, as the lead role? So that's my next dream.
And of course, with the modern new hybrid world and the fact we can all broadcast, there's actually not, we often have, well, historically, we've had to wait for gatekeepers to give us permission to tell us that we've got a good idea. But even, you know, today is a testament to the fact that if you've got an idea, you can start broadcasting about it.
Well, that's right. And you're completely right. The gatekeepers have gone now. So,
yes.
And I think mostly that's a good thing.
Yes.
You know, it pros is. And cons, but mostly it's a good thing.
I agree.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So it's my great privilege and delight to be able to curate you through the journey of the Good Listening To show, Denise. There's going to be a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There'll be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake, and a golden baton as a cheeky chappy chaser. So it's all to play for. So let's get you on the open road of that, if I may. So first of all, with your particular focus on sustainability, I'm fascinated to know what your clearing or serious happy place is going to be. So where does Denise go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Well, this is very problematic, Chris, because actually my favourite place to get clutter-free and feel in the zone is bobbing around on a lovely warm sea, having swum so far out that all I can see is the horizon and I can pretend I'm the only person on the earth. But unfortunately, that requires quite, you know, a high carbon consuming flight. so I'm going to settle for my bath. It's not ideal.
Oh, I love the fact that it's water-based, and I love the scale there. We went macro, micro there. We've gone from the open ocean in the middle of nowhere, floating. And you're not on a lilo by the sound of it. This is just you having done the work of swimming out.
Yes. Whoever I'm with has to sit on the shore panicking in case I drown, but I'm always superbly confident that I can bob around forever. I'm very buoyant. It's one of my assets, very buoyant.
What a lovely thing to say about myself. I had a lovely lockdown and I'm very buoyant. it sounds like an Epsom bath of salt if you're trying to float. So the Dead Sea would be quite appealing to you, I would imagine, even though it's got the wrong title.
Yes, I did try an immersion tank once. That was weird. You're literally on top of the water. You don't sink down at all.
A previous guest, an eminent director called Phelan McDermott, he's the only guest so far to have named his serious happy place as being a flotation tank.
Oh, right.
So it's about going really deep to float. Anyway, I love that. So are you quite sure you don't want to be in the open ocean because it's your clearing, metaphorically, so you can go where
you want?
It's
like I can magically transport myself there through, a greenhouse gas emissions-free flight. Then, yes, let me bob around on the ocean.
It could almost be a bit sort of Owl and the Pussycat. We'll allow you to have your bath in the middle of the ocean.
I'm going to stick with that, Chris, yes. I'm having my bath in the middle of the ocean. Why not have both?
I absolutely love that. So that's a wonderful, wonderful clearing. So now, a bit Waiting for Godot-esque and existentially and quite surreal, I'm going to arrive with the tree. I'm going to pop up, not necessarily wearing frog gear, nor should it be scary, but I've arrived next to your bathtub floating in the middle of the ocean. And just give us a geographical location, whereabouts in the ocean would you like your bath to be floating?
I think let's have the Mediterranean.
I like that, but we're definitely going warm sea, azure blue, clear sea, bobbing about in your bath. Okay, so this tree now is going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. How'd you like these apples? And this is a lovely, juicy story construct called 5-4-3-2-1. We've had 5 minutes to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you, 2 things that never fail to grab your attention, and that's borrowed from the film Up to talk about, squirrels. You know, there's a dog that's constantly distracted by squirrels, as we all are in life, in our hectic lives. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So it's not a memory test, I'll curate you through it, but interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree in your bathtub in the Mediterranean as you see fit.
Okay. Well, I think I have to start with my family. So my brother was, well, I grew up thinking of him as mentally handicapped, but nowadays we'd say learning disabilities. But he was very uniquely himself, not Down syndrome, but he couldn't really speak properly except for swear words, which came out perfectly. He was, imagine a human being with no inhibitions. So wherever we went, he'd make our friends for us. He'd go up, he'd say hello. The first thing he'd do is establish himself at a bar and get the barman to feed him Coca-Colas all day long. And but at the same time, he was hugely embarrassing. So, you know, he would hug someone if he didn't like them. He'd tell them to F off. He'd, you know, he would do whatever he wanted at any one time. And I adored him. But I think I grew up immune to being embarrassed. And that's, a lot of people say, oh, how can you lecture? How can you do this? How can you do that? And I just think, I've stood by while my brothers decided to take a wee in the middle of the street. This isn't going to bother me. And so my mother also was half German. And I don't know, I mean, I'm allowed to stereotype. No, my mum was German. I'm allowed to stereotype I'm half German. I'm going to claim that right.
Yes.
But like a lot of German people I've met, she was brutally honest. I mean, really brutally honest. And
there's a lovely through line of bluntness here, as in your brother without a filter. If I may just ask before we keep talking about your mother, you mentioned him, I couldn't help hearing in the past tense there. Is he still with us?
Oh, yes. Well, that leads on to my last.
Oh,
my,
sorry,
my
sorry.
So you... I'll come to that, Chris.
So, apologies.
No, my mother also was half German, very charming, very blunt, and a little bit outside of her comfort zone in England, because she married an Englishman, and then having a son that really restricted her freedom. And and my dad was just a maverick. He came from a long line of first sons who'd upset their father and got cut out the will, so and then made it afresh himself, thinking, sod you all. So I grew up with an absolutely and quite a charismatic but very odd family, all quite uniquely individual. And I think it's made me kind of, not too embarrassed about things. I didn't realise I wasn't too embarrassed about things until I met people who were.
Yes.
So my current partner is constantly sort of saying, well, did you notice this? Or, you know, you may have come across that. This person was thinking this. And I just think,
didn't notice. Yes. And was your brother diagnosed with Tourette's? Is that where the swearing came from?
No, it wasn't. We're not quite sure what it was.
By the way, I already like the sound of him, because he's just monumentally honest and present.
Monumentally honest. Yeah. He was very uniquely himself, so I'm not quite sure where he fit.
Yeah.
And so it was a very individual family, and so it made me feel that I didn't have to necessarily conform to any expectations, and just being myself was enough, really. So
I think that
gave me, it wasn't until quite recently I thought about the impact that had on me, because I'm probably going to be a grandma soon, fingers crossed.
Congratulations.
And I'm just realizing that I'm not so worried. When I was about to become a parent, I didn't even realize till recently that I was actually quite worried, just in case. And so I sort of kept a bit of myself back until, you know, all was safe. And it's so lovely to sort of see my son so look forward to it without that worry, that fear. And sometimes you don't realize you're scared till it's gone, or you see someone else who isn't.
So. And has that through line of directness passed the generation down to your own son as well?
Well, no, he's got a very high sense of emotional intelligence and sensitivity to everyone's feelings. He's completely the other way, so maybe to compensate for his mum.
This is lovely shapage so far, so keep going.
And I think another one would be, and this refers back, is death. He died in his early 40s, far too young. It was on a very, very hot day. It was a heart attack. I was just about to go on holiday, actually. I was called back from the airport and I was there as he died. I'm so glad I was. And my mum died a couple of years ago. My dad died a little bit earlier than I would have liked. And a lot of my early friends, I've had a lot of death, I think is what I'm saying, Chris. My best friend, I went traveling to India when I came back after university. He was dead in a car crash. And my best friend lost her husband and her daughter. And there's been a lot of people, and I can't watch early videos now, save my son's first birthday, because so many people through various means. And this isn't going to be too grim, because for a while it was very grim, and I got paranoid, I think, that people I cared about would die. But then it actually led to me being utterly fearless. Because anything, I thought, well, is anyone going to die? No. Well, then I'm not bothered. And so I think I've managed to seize the moment. You know, carpe diem, it's really hammered into you when you lose people. You don't sit around. You don't waste time. You get on with it. And there's no reason to be scared.
That's very relatable because of my own love of Stoic philosophy, the idea that, you know, the ancient wisdoms of way back when, it's not society's first rodeo, and death is a constant, as is life, until it isn't.
So I think that's been one of the reasons why I've managed to do a lot of the things that I wouldn't have done, because I just didn't mess around, basically. My dog is battering at the door, wanting to let her. Can I come let her in?
Of course you can. I love that. Signs of real life go to the background. Which, by the way, in the early pandemic, John Lewis were brilliant because they said in the background, people on Zoom.
Yeah, that was a lovely thing, wasn't it, about the pandemic? You saw people's home lives, and people stopped pretending they didn't have home lives or children or dogs.
And your dog is now successfully. And what's your dog's name? Quick mention for your dog.
Lily. She's gorgeous. She's
Lily,
gorgeous.
Did you say?
Yes, Lily, yes.
My daughter's called Lily. Sorry.
It's a cool name, but Lily makes her way into Habitat Man. You know, renamed for her own protection, but as the gorgeous dog in Habitat Man.
Lovely, and I'm glad she's inside now. That's good. Back to you.
So let's see. We've done my family. We've done death. I think another thing probably affected me was my university days, because I grew up in quite a small village, quite narrow-minded, actually. Nice people, but I always felt a bit of an outsider, not just because of my old family, but I really cared about the world and I had opinions on things. And everyone used to say, oh, you're odd, you ought to meet this other odd person, and they'd be a complete nutter. And I think I shouldn't be odd. I don't think I am odd. I just think this is a very insular environment.
Yes.
And the moment I went to university, I met all kinds of people with all kinds of opinions, all kinds of backgrounds, you know, religious people, political people, you know, people passionate about a cause, you know, gay people, all kinds. So it was just so nice. And I made such good friends. And because I'd grown up feeling like I didn't quite fit in, or people liked me because I was odd, To actually meet people who didn't think I was odd, it's made me really value the friendships I have. Probably more than some people.
There is such power, as we know, in society in being an outlier, because outliers are the best change makers, because they have a super objective perspective, because they're not doing what everybody else is doing. They're thinking differently. So actually being an outlier is more of an agile way of being, I would say.
Yeah. I like the intellectual stimulation, the ideas, the debates. And I met some people there in a comedy group, and we wrote pantos and sketch shows and so on. And they were hilarious. They were so funny. So that shaped me for sure. We had a group of people who took a lot of pride in being mean funny, if you know what I mean. But it was a measure of how accepted you were by how rude they felt they were able to be to you.
Yeah.
So sort of inverse of British politeness. So,
no one's ever named the genre of that as mean funny, you know, if it's spiteful or angry. Yeah.
I don't think anyone would ever have pushed it if they thought someone was getting really hurt, if they touched a nerve. But yes.
It was pushing the boundaries.
That's right. And so that's quite fun. And then I think the next thing that shaped me a lot towards the life I have now was a partner of mine, an ex-partner now, but what the legacy he left to me was, at the time I knew him, he was doing a course in media and he had to write screenplays. And he'd watch all these films and deconstruct them for me, and we wrote screenplays. And then we wrote one together called Knickers, and I loved it so much. It was actually based on a true story because I was a single mother at the time, and I was trying to work out how to make ends meet. And I had all these clothes that I used to have when I was working, but I couldn't quite still doing as a mum. And I'd gone back to university. So I thought, well, I'll sell them off. And this chap arrived, and he wanted my dirty laundry. And he was prepared to pay a lot. And I thought, hello, this is a little cottage industry. I didn't. But it did strike me as it was a nice idea for a film. Well, I mean, you know, it's been nicked now by Orange is the New Black. They've got that plot in their thing. But we wrote it. They didn't nick it. They didn't know about it. But British Screen liked it. We took it to British Screen, and
there's a piece of work called Denise Barden's Knickers out there, is there?
Not publicly available, but it's on my laptop.
Just to go to the dark side, somebody turned up wanting not just your knickers, but all the dirty washing.
Well, no, I mean, I said that just to spare the blushes of your viewers. They wanted my dirty pants, yes.
Yes. That's the first time we bought
that. Straight away, I was showing them dresses and suits. They were completely uninterested. And it's this big bloke. And I was like, well, I'm broad-minded, all right. But then it turned out, you know, he had quite specific interests. I don't know. Maybe I'd accidentally put some term in my ad that sort of had a double meaning.
Your brother should have been around to sort of give him short shrift and show you.
Yes.
Give him a hug, tell him to have a hug.
Yeah, he would have. So that was my first sort of taste of writing, actually, writing that up. And we would have got success, but then there was government cutbacks, British Screen lost their funding, and I decided to throw myself into academic writing, which paid. So proper job. But I've returned to writing now. And but I think it was my ex-partner there who sort of got me on the road.
And he's still with us by the sound of it. I know there was a lot of death.
Yes.
It wasn't like accidentally bumped him off.
No.
Important to clarify that. Thank you. It's official. I think now we're on to three things that inspire you. And thank you for those delicious shapages.
Well, actually, I was going to talk about Habitat Man, but I've mentioned him. So what I will do is mention Dave Goulson. Now, he's a professor of biology at Sussex University. He set up the Bumblebee Conservation Trust. And he's written loads of lovely books, such as The Garden Jungle, How to Save the Planet Through Gardening. And he's got this lovely manner and the lovely way that my own green garden consultant had of seeing the world through insects' eyes and opening your eyes to a whole different way of viewing it. So rather than say, you know, pesticides, you know, kill every pest, you know, he says, well, so what if they have a nibble? They're part of the ecosystem.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, a plant that is meant to be in that environment will survive that fine. And he really gets over the fact that when you use pesticides, you're killing the predators of the pests as well. And the pests will reproduce faster than the predators. So actually you're creating a problem for yourself.
Yes.
And he was kind enough to read Habitat Man, and he went through every bit of it, checking the ecological information. He suggested the odd, very lyrical passage himself. And so while the original Green Garden consultant, his name shall remain anonymous, gave me the idea, I think it was Dave Goulson giving me the confidence that actually the idea worked, that he, someone I admire hugely, thought it was really good and really enjoyed reading it. So I don't think I would have written it without that sort of approbation, that sort of confidence boosting.
And I love the expression, looking at the world through insects' eyes. So presumably compound eyes gives you a sort of multifaceted way of looking at the world.
Yes, exactly. And I love
a honeycomb of perspectives almost. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the things that I think people have said from reading it is they too have learned to see it in that way. It's just a different perspective.
With regard to what people can actually do to help save the environment, there was something rather humorous pointed recently where someone said, I'm making my own small contribution by rewilding my sitting room. Excuse to never do any dusting or hoovering ever again.
My garden's pretty wild. Yeah, I've definitely rewilded that. And it's the low time option. So, that was good. So I was very, very pleased about that. Another inspiration would be another writer, actually, James Graham. Now, I don't know if you've come across him. He wrote Sherwood, which was a BBC series,
yeah,
where it's set in a miner's village and there's a murder. And he alternates between the 80s miners' strike and today, and the divisions between the miners and the scabs, you know. And he's done a number of works like that. He did one on Brexit. I think it's called An Uncivil War. I just saw a play of his, Dear England, about Southgate.
Yeah. Yes.
Letter to the country, Dear England. And the constant theme in his work is taking divisions in society and showing you perspective from different perspectives. So once you've watched it, you go away feeling uplifted and just kinder.
Yes, lovely.
And I mean, he would be great to have on the show, but it'll be a coup to get him. But he's got a lovely story because he apparently grew up in a mining village. One parent was, you know, very left wing and a miner. Another parent was very right wing, and they got divorced, and the dad moved next door. And I just picture this little boy trying desperately to sort of stop the arguments and bring them together. And he's doing that now with his fiction.
Yeah, lovely. Have you met him? Or you?
Oh, I'd love to, because he's the writer I admire the most.
And just say his name once again. I know I've got Sherwood in my head, but it's David what?
James Graham.
James Graham.
Everything he's done has been brilliant. A lot of plays, a lot of screenplays. Really nice, unassuming chap as well. I saw him in an interview. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do, I guess, is look at the issues in the world. And for me, a lot of it's about climate and loss of nature and biodiversity.
Yes.
And thinking, how can I write the solutions into a story and leave readers feeling happy, not scared, yeah, and empowered and entertained and educated?
That's such a lovely...
So he inspired me for that, I think.
And for both of our, what I'll do for both of us, I'll send him this link, this clip of you talking about him and how much you admire him. And I hope you get to meet him, and I hope I get to interview him. He sounds wonderful. Third inspiration.
Right. So my third inspiration would be the Cuban people. So I taught for a long time business ethics. And one of the things that worried me a lot of the time is how easy is it actually for a business to be genuinely ethical or sustainable within a competitive free market economy? Because if you're the only one paying decent wages and others in your sector are paying sweatshop wages, and you are responsible to the shareholders, how much freedom of movement do you really have? And also, we need to be consuming yet less to live within our planetary means. But businesses make money from selling more and persuading us to buy more than we need, really. So I thought, I'd love to see a country which has a completely different system and see how that works. So I went to Cuba, and I'd done some research in the England, talked to people about whether social responsibility or ethics or sustainability conflicted with profit. And I got, you know, lots of really good interviews. When I went to Cuba and I was speaking to social enterprises, so then it's mostly social enterprises or businesses that have partnered with the government.
Yeah.
And they didn't understand the question. And that was so interesting. They said, well, we are an enterprise to serve our society. Why would we do anything?
And what's the question? I heard you.
Yeah, are there any tensions between being socially responsible or sustainable and society or ethics or profit? So are the tensions between profit and society, really? And they didn't really understand the question. And I went to one organic gardening company, an organic farm. They have to be organic because of the embargo, which means they can't get access to any chemicals. But they said now they're very glad they're organic because actually it's better. And I asked them how they price their products. And they said, well, you know, I said, does the government specify the price? And they said, there's a price you can't go above. But within that, it's just supply and demand. So I said, well, does supply exceed demand or demand exceed supply? They said, no, demand exceeds supply. And I said, so is the price at the highest level? No. No, we already earn twice as much as the most in the community earn. Why would we price it higher?
So for them, there's an absence of
differential of two was as much as they felt they could stomach in terms of their notions of what was fair and just.
And I was just going to say there's a societal absence of greed, which is the big difference.
Yes, and it's there was a Cuban revolution at the end of the 50s led by Fidel Castro and Che Guevara, and many of the older people said to me, we would not be here because of the corruption and the ill health and lack of education. From that, I had an education, I have access to health. I went there a second time with a colleague of mine who works in public health, because she was interested to see why they were probably more innovative in their drugs and treatments than we were in the West, despite being really poor. And it's because their metric of success is health, not profit. And it's actually not that profitable to invest money in drugs that are difficult to manufacture. It's much easier to make versions of drugs we already have that are maybe marginally different. So I found it very hard to publish because there's this idea that anything in Cuba is bad because it's not a democracy.
I was going to ask if you'd published the paper, because it sounds like The Cuban Way. I know you probably thought of your own title, but The Cuban Way is a gift to us all, I would say, if it's all about a lack of greed.
No, I couldn't get it published. And it turned out that's a Cuban curse. So for the first time ever, I had reviewers like it, but the editor overruled it. And I'd never had that before.
Wow.
And the other one was saying, no, because Fidel Castro is a brutal dictator who ruined the lives of his people. And it's like, well, A, we hadn't mentioned him in the paper, and B, that wasn't the impression I was getting from the Cuban people. And, you know, they weren't this oppressed, you know, brainwashed group I'd been led to believe. And I learned a lot about their international solidarity. So anytime there's any sort of medical emergency, the Cuban doctors will go out there. So we missed a load because they're all off treating Ebola. So for a country that's so poor, to be so generous, with its medical aid. And it just seemed that spirit of solidarity and fortitude was so inspiring. And I had my son at the time, I took them with me on the second trip, and they were old enough then to wander around by themselves. And he took his guitar, and him and his younger brother would walk up and down the Havana Boulevard by the sea. And he said they were followed by Cuban sort of young people, and he gave everything away, and they'd show him places and then demand money. And he was beginning to get a little bit cynical. And on the last day, the same thing was happening. He said, I'm sorry, I would love to have a drink and buy you a drink, but I'm broke. And they said, oh, come on, we'll take you for a drink. And he was blown away by that. He didn't really understand that in Cuba, the one who has the money pays. It's just the norm.
Right, yes. It does make complete sense. And with the socio-political resistance to you being able to publish, because of what we talked about at the beginning, now we can publish anyway. So I hope you've published something in any case.
Well, I have found it quite hard to publish, but I did do a musical called Fidel, where I was for a while an impresario, which is such a grand title, but I did it as a competition where school kids wrote songs for a musical about Fidel, because it's on the curriculum. And then we put it on in Southampton, we put it on in London, and I'd have loved to take it further because it was such a lovely project. But it's so, musicals are so expensive and time consuming. And, you know, I had a full-time job. And so there's only so far I could go down that line.
You're very talented, because even if I thought, oh, I'll write a musical, I just know I couldn't.
Well, I didn't write the music. I wrote the story. I'm no talent with music. No, it was fun. Good fun.
But I'm glad it's
free.
Yes. And I'm glad it has an outlet and had an outlet. Lovely to get children involved, because that's where, you know, the children are the future, and la-di-blah, as we know.
The station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard Topical Gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line. Ships Registry. The Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Beautiful stuff. Now, two squirrels now. What are your squirrels of distraction? What squirrels never fails to grab your attention? I'm assuming it may be climate-related, but we can find out. So what are your squirrels or monsters of distraction?
No, they're not climate-related at all, actually. Alleyways.
Sure.
so my partner gets mad with me. Anytime I go anywhere, if I see a little alleyway heading off, I have to go down it. I just find them intriguing. So, you know, sometimes you end up in a sort of nowhere quite often. Somewhere you end up somewhere that looks a bit dodgy. But sometimes you find a little cut through to somewhere lovely that you never would have seen. So it's the mystery of alleyways.
I love that. And where one prefers to go, have you heard it called desire lines before?
No, I haven't.
So in a park, when the municipal powers that be say this is the path, you'll invariably see lots of trails off to the grass somewhere else. And those are desire lines. Your own private desire lines are at the byways and alleyways of Denise Barton. That's a lovely squirrel.
And another squirrel is music, I think. If ever I hear a bar of music wherever I'm, like a pass a doorway, I'm transfixed. And there's a couple of examples. One, when I grew up in my little village, I was so bored as a teenager. I used to pace up and down, thinking, I'm so bored, where is life? And I just walk around the village. And if ever I heard music coming from a house or even a party, I'd be like, you know, the kid at the shop window.
You're the world's best gatecrasher. I love that.
And when I travelled around India after university, at the time, all they had was this high-pitched singing by Lata Mangeshkar, sort of Bollywood film music. Everywhere you went, it was Bollywood film music. And I remember one time we'd gone on this big train right to the middle of nowhere, and there were these some girls on the train, and they offered to sing us some Hindi folk songs. So they did, and it wasn't hot, you know, Bollywood music. It was all about how they didn't want to be loved just for their dowries. And then they asked us to sing a song. And I realised the dearth of our musical culture, because I could not think of one song that I knew all the words to. But they were very insistent. So in the end, we there was only one song we both knew the words to, and you will never guess what it is.
Sorry, Mike, the comedian in me is going Nelly the Elephant, which would be deeply unsatisfying. No.
It's worse than that. It was Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mama. Ooh. God, so you went for a bit long one then. That's a bit of a...
We did the whole thing. The whole train clustered into our carriage and we were doing the head banging. It was
oh,
very...
I commend cool. you for that. So singing Bohemian Rhapsody as a payback for Please Don't Love Us Just For Our Dowries.
But then we... So walking along the streets of some city, and I heard Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, come from this basement. And it was the first proper Western music I'd heard. I'd been there 3 months, and it wasn't, you know, it was like guitar. And I'd want to do a riff now, but I'll spare you. But it was just home. And that was the moment I got homesick, and I had to go in that bar. And my partner's saying, I don't think it's okay to go in that bar. It looks dodgy, but it's calling to me.
As are the alleyways. And I have to ask you, what's your favourite alleyway that you've stumbled down?
Oh, gosh. I think it was probably one in Cuba, actually, where I ended up at a side of bar where we actually concocted the plan for Fidel the Musical.
I'm glad I asked that question. That question was meant to be. It was silly to me. And now,
I was going to say, so Pink Floyd, we ended up in this bar where I was only a girl at the time. I was like this sort of 20-year-old girl in a den full of, like, you know, middle-aged Indian men. I got some looks, but I sat and enjoyed the music.
And now, the final, number one, is now a quirky or unusual fact about you, Denise, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
Well, it won't surprise you, I get lost a lot.
It's because you're just always interested in the alleyways and byways of Denise Barden. I love that.
If you go on a walk with me, you will get lost. So that's someone who knows me would know that about me. So
is that because you're not blessed with a great GPS instinct?
I think I am. But it's probably all following these alleyways and byways. I will go off on paths if I see them.
And with a trail of breadcrumbs, you'll always find your way back, I'm sure, which is lovely. So we've shaken your tree. Hurrah. Next, we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. And now we're talking about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, here's a bar of gold for you. What are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
Playing God with my characters. So I feel so helpless to do so much about the world. But with my characters, they come alive for me. And when you've got a plot point and you think, well, how can I manage this without that? Or how can I get this over without being clunky or boring? Or how can I reveal this backstory in a way that's really fun? When you hit upon the solution, there's this moment of joy where it all comes together. And quite often, dog walkers locally will see me cackling to myself. I remember the habitat man, I was trying to think, how do I reveal his backstory? And I had him daydreaming about being a mastermind contestant where he has to answer questions and the questions get more and more personal, you know, why have you ended up in this position? And it was a lovely way because I, you know, it's the kind of thing people dream about. And it was such a fun way to reveal backstory. And immediately the massively clunky chapter I'd written that tried to do the same thing, I'd managed to do it in one fun scene. And I was just so happy. You know, there's no thrill like it when you know you've done good.
That's a lovely answer to the alchemy in gold. And now I'm going to award you with a cake. And this is the finder. So do you like cake, Denise?
Chris, I like cake so much that I once led the happy birthday chant at a party where I didn't know the host just to get my hands on the birthday cake.
By the way, hot off the press, I've got a new series strand coming up, which is about the big birthday show. So anyone with a big birthday coming up. So that's lovely that you love cake, and it's about birthday cake as well, which is an accident. So the birthday cake is yours, and we'll put a bit of a cherry on the cake now with stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
I think one is a friend of mine said, if you want to be miserable, think about yourself. And it's a bit of a Buddhist philosophy as well. And I like it because it works. not because I'm a especially moral person, it actually works. And whenever I kind of get sunk in gloom or anything like that, I say that to myself and I look outwards and immediately I'm engaged in the world again and with other people around me and I'm happier.
So it is a very, very clever construct, I have to say, because yeah. It sounds like it's totally introspective and a bit doomy, yeah. But actually it's inviting you to do the exact yin-yang opposite. Yeah. So just say the quote one more time.
If you want to be miserable, think about yourself.
Yes, I love that. Invoke you to not be so flipping selfish. It's not all about us. It's all about the rest of the world, the fact we are participants within it. Love that. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
This was someone that I met at university. Really nice chap. I never quite got to know him, but I remember there's one time we just sat on a wall, waiting for the same bus or something. And I confided in him my sense of being responsible for the world's ills and being worried about the world and feeling so powerless to make a difference. And he said, I think about it as throwing a pebble in a pond, the ripples. You are the pebble. All you can do is control your ripples. So you can create ripples by what you buy, by how you vote, by what you put out in the world, by how you treat people. And you're responsible for that. And that was doable. I can manage my own ripples, not always. But, you know, it's something I feel I've got control over. And whenever I feel helpless in the face of everything, I just think, well, as long as my ripples are all right, that's all I can do.
So at the point of controlling our own ripples, that rather sadly brings us to the end of time for the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full glorious episode straight away, go to Buzzsprout, where the main podcast proper is hosted, or wherever you get your podcast, search for the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. So I've been Chris Grimes, that was Denise Baden, and do check out dabaden.com for full information as to all of Denise's work. So until next week, thank you very much. Do check out the goodlisteningtoshow.com website, and goodbye. You've been listening to The Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.